All right, so I wanted to just talk about the Parshas Balak a little, and I want to take up a couple of specific questions. Okay. It's in general it's a strange story, right? And the question is, the basic questions are, what was Bilam really? What kind of a person, what kind of powers did he have? And what did Balak, what was he really? What did Balak hope to achieve by hiring him, right? And what happened when he finally went? All of the each time he goes to see what to say, and he comes back with praises until Balak is already fed up and has enough of him. Right? But the first question, let's go back to the question of, let's expound a little bit on the question of what Balak thought to achieve. So Rashi says, right, says, first of all, they were very frightened, right? Balak was, all the people were very frightened because they saw that Bnei Israel had just defeated Sichon and Og. And they were on their doorstep, and they were afraid of being next. Right, Sichon and Og were their protectors. So Rashi says, what does it mean they went to the Zikne Midyan? What does it mean Vayomer Mol was Zikne Midyan? Halomei Olam, they hated each other. So he says, what did Moab see to go and take an Eitzah from Midyan? Kevan Sharos Yisrael Notzchim Shalom Kimin Agaolam. So they saw Bnei Yisrael were very successful out of the ordinary manner, not in the normal way. They weren't a big powerful nation, but they fought. But they were able to wipe out these two powerful kings. Amru Manhigom Shel Elu B'Midyan Nisgadel Nishol Me'em Mami Daso. So they said, hey, this leader grew up in Midyan, right, Moshe. So let's go talk to the Midyan and see what kind of guy he is. Amru lohem ein koch ela b'fiv. So they told him, they told him his koach is in his mouth. Amru lohem, I'm sorry, Amru af onu novo aleim ba'odam shekocho b'fiv. So why did they go seek out Bilam? Because they recognized that Bnei Yisrael were very powerful, and the power didn't come from a physical strength. So they sought advice from Midyan, and they said, oh, their leader has a koch in his path. So they said, okay, we'll go hire somebody who has a koch in his path. Right, and we're going to go and get Bilam. Okay. So what was Bilam? What was he? What was his... He had a great reputation, obviously. Right? He had a great reputation that those that he curses are cursed, and those that his curses... Kiyaki Yodati, Eisashir Tavarich Mavarich, Eisashir Tor, you're. Right? He had a reputation of being effective at casting curses and brachos. But what was he really? How did he gain that reputation? So it's interesting. The Barbanel and the Ibn Ezra, they both say that he really was a chacham. He had some insight. Okay, are exactly what his wisdom was. You know, was it in reading the stars, or psychology, or you know, politics, whatever it was. He had some. I mean, let's translate it into our terms. Okay, he had some actual chachma, and he was able to understand and see how things would unfold. And when he would see that one party was going to lose or win, he would run in there and he would make a pronouncement, and then people would think it was him who did it. That was, he had a deep insight that people couldn't, the average person couldn't see. So he was an opportunist. He would go in, right? If you know that a certain team is going to win and nobody else knows, so you say, I give them my blessing. And they win. And you gain a reputation of having the ability to bless and curse people. Okay? That's what they say. That's the Ibn Ezra of Barmanel. Ramban says he was a kosim. Also, it means something like that. Some sort of a soothsayer. I mean, not really. You know, they hold that he wasn't really. But the point is, and the Rambam says he was a chacham, and he had ruach hakodesh at times. But the point is, he wasn't really a person of who, you know, he wasn't a true navi, even though he had these incidents over here. He wasn't really a person who was on the high level of a navi, like a navi Yisrael. I mean, the Rashi says it was given to the goyim as a navi in order that they can't complain that they don't have access to something like that. But the point is, he wasn't really a person like the Ram describes. And nevuah comes from a natural type of a progression to become a navi, and it has to do with a person's own perfection. So really, Bilam was a person who wasn't really a chacham like a chacham Yisrael. He was very wise. He had a great insight, and he was able to impress people and use that insight to garner this reputation as a man of you know, mystical powers, and sort of tapped into that type of a realm. But he wasn't truly a person who had deep, you know, philosophical knowledge as a pursuit in its own right. The only knowledge, any knowledge that he had, he really used it for his own personal benefit. And that's what the Chazal say. He said, even if you give me a house full of, you know, gold and silver, it shows what his true underlying motivations were. But he had this reputation as a man of great you know, ability in the realm of blessing and curse, and that's what Rashi quotes, that to Balak he was like an equivalent to Moshe. And then to Balak he understood. He said, well, here's the guy Moshe. They're telling me that Moshe is a person who wins with his whose greatness is in his peh. And to him, he looked at Bilam as a counterbalance to that. So he said, okay, I'm going to go to Bilam and try to use him to fight what they say, you have to fight fire with fire, right? So if Bnei Yisrael are successful with the method of Moshe, of the peh, then Balak thought he could go and do that same thing, play that on them. Okay, so really that gets down to what I really want to try to explain here. What I really want to explain is Balak's mistake, and really what it comes down to is the view of the primitive view or the idolatrous view of how to relate to God versus the Torah view, that and I think that the parsha of Balak really works out that type of an idea. It shows that that, because the question is, how did Balak think he could succeed by hiring Bilam? I mean, Bnei Yisrael just had tremendous success in Mitzrayim. They had tremendous success in with Sichon and Og. So obviously, they're a nation that is, they have Siyata Dishmaya. They have a certain relationship with God. They have a certain Hashkacha from Hashem. So how does he think that he can just hire Bilam and fight that? Because if you think that this nation is really, you know, under God's protection, so why does he think he could just he could hire Bilam and beat him? So what I want to say is, if we look into it, you'll see that it has to do with the general outlook of the Ovdei Avodah Zarah to the idea of God in general, and in specific, how man relates to God. And really, the Parsha is trying to express to through the things that Balak, that Bilam said to Balak, trying to explain to him the proper idea, and it's not something that you can just look at on a superficial level and say, well, he fights with his mouth and he fights with his mouth. Okay. So what really did, Balak really think? So he really has to do with the whole idea of the whole primitive idea of God. Now, what's the primitive idea of God? Is that they really look at God as like you have in Greek mythology or different or other religions. Now, God is really like a super type of a super being. Now, there still is a regular kind of a, you know, it's something that we can relate to, but with phenomenal power, like the Greek gods, you know, Zeus, the people, sort of like people, like superhuman, superhero type people, right? And but really, overall, it's the basic idea is that God to them really is within the general framework that they have of life, fits into it. It's not unusual in the type of thing it is, just maybe to the degree of ability that it has. You understand? Like, it's like a person who can move things with their mind, you know, like control, you know, that type of a, they never really get out of the familiar framework. It's just attributing greater and greater qualities to, but they're starting with something that is really ordinary, just building it up into something that is beyond anything that we've actually seen, but basically the point is it still fits in to some framework of what we know. Still fits into some framework of existence. And in that framework, how did he look at God at the Jews? So he looked at it like this, said, look, somehow or other, they figured out how to manipulate this God. They figured out a way to, you know, please God, or to, gain some of the strength of God. You understand? And therefore, he thought, well, I could hire somebody who could also do something like that. And, you understand? To him, to the mind of Balak, it was that the Jews, you know, somehow tapped into something, or they found a way to gain, to utilize God. But that whole relationship is just like a regular utilitarian type of relationship. You know what I mean? Like they found some secret incantation or formula or thing to do that could, but if we could get a guy, an expert like this, someone who also has a reputation for being able to tap into that world, and maybe we'll bring down some of the magic to us. You understand? That was his attitude. That was his outlook. That's why it's not a kasha that they were so successful up till now. It just means that they have some sort of, they have some ability to tap into a resource. But why can't we? Why can't we? Okay. And it's interesting. It's interesting. It seems that the primitive outlook to God, I mean, in general, there's a somewhat of a paradox when you come down to the question of, you know, of God, and that is in terms of trying to, you know, please God and gain God's favor in terms of religious activity. Because on the one hand, God is all-powerful, right? But on the other hand, there's something that you can do for him. You know what I mean? In the primitive sense, in the primitive idea, it seems there's two ways. There are two ways to solve the philosophical, somewhat the logical problem. If God is so powerful and omnipotent, what can you do for him? You know what I mean? What does he need you for? What are you trying? How could you possibly gain favor in his eyes and get something from him? I mean, ultimately, the primitive man is looking to manipulate and use God for himself, right? There's a certain fear, there's a certain loss of, you know, a control that you want. And there's an idea that God really fits in a very self-centered type of a way. Because it's not really coming from a philosophical idea of looking to what's deeper behind creation. It comes from a very, very primitive, infantile, selfish desire to control outcomes, and you're sort of projecting this lack of control. You're sort of looking for something that you can do to feel that you gain the control, like a rain dance or something you feel that you can do to get yourself some control. But it would seem that they have to, they look at God either as, you know, the God is like is greater, but at the same time still needs something from us. That's one way, like sacrifice, like the ancient, some of the like human sacrifice. Now you look at it like, okay, God is great, but for some reason, I guess they don't really think into it all that much. For some reason, he needs something from us too. And we, as man, can satisfy a certain need. So in that way, God is like a big, powerful king, like a physical human king, who may be powerful and able to, inflict great pain and destroy you. But at the same time, he sort of needs you for his taxes or things like that. So in the primitive mind, they had the, you know, like an idea of human sacrifice, like sort of like God is maybe raising us for some use, and every once in a while you gotta throw the virgin into the volcano or something, you know, whatever it is, whatever it was. But it's some silly idea. What's that?
Where'd you get that one?
That's that's a classic.
The specific virgin of the volcano.
Yeah, sure.
I'm gonna have to Google that.
Sure. If I had just thought of it, I wouldn't have said it. That's
right.
For sure.
Oh, I said that one.
But then there's another idea. It seems that like saying that God really is beyond and impersonal, and not really doesn't really need us in any way. But at the same time, there's a way like to bring down the influence. You know, a certain way like to bring down the influence. But in both cases, like whatever it is, absorbing certain, using certain symbols and like, you know, cosmic things, you know. But the point is like this, that the problem is really it's an intrinsic problem. that when you have a view of God, like in the primitive sense, then at the same time you're saying God is all powerful, but still somehow needs you. So either you could see that's it, that's just your idea, or I think a little bit more of a sophisticated idea would be that, like the Ramban talks about, that type of an idea. Like they held you can just like absorb some influences of the from the heavens. But anyway, that's basically the approach of Balak. And Bilam played into it. He gave the impression that he has some sort of keys. He has the keys to these kinds of powers. But really, what's interesting is that I think that the Parsha over here is really trying to explain to Balak through Bilam and somewhat to Bilam himself the proper idea and the real source of the strength of the Jew. And that's what the Torah is like this. It says, Vayomer Elokim el Bilam, lo selech imahem, lo so'or esa'am ki voruchu. That Hashem is telling Bilam over here, lo so'or'am ki voruchu. There's a certain idea that the nation is itself blessed. Meaning to say that it's not these people are not subject to any idea of blessing them or cursing them. They're not subject to this idea. Their position is not from some sort of a blessing or a curse that you could undo. You could curse them and lower them or bless them. Right? Hashem says you don't need the blessings. You can't curse them and we don't need their blessings. They don't need your blessings. They are Baruch Hu. What does that mean to say? It means to say that really the idea of Torah solves this question in an amazing way, and that is that we believe that God is beyond we can't fit God into any framework of ours. Right, can't fit God into any framework of the universe. God is the Borei Ha'olam, and there's nothing that we can do to gain His favor in that primitive type of a sense, or garner some sort of bring down some sort of influence. That whole methodology of the primitive mind is completely absent. It's completely impossible. Okay. And the whole approach of Bilam and Balak is completely a complete fallacy. What is it that caused the success of the Jews in the coming out of Mitzrayim and in the Midbar? It wasn't that they were able to do certain things to God to get favor. It's really that we have this idea, we have an idea that we're part of the creation, we're part of the Bria, and we're a unique part of the Bria, where we have the Tzelem Elokim. That's part of the potential that we're given through creation. And when a person actualizes that potential, when a person completes that, his own creation, so to speak. He thinks into ideas, and he really gains in his knowledge, and he really perfects his mind. Then he really becomes Adam. He really becomes the he really fulfills the purpose of the of his creation. Now, as man is unique in that sense, every other thing that's created is created like it is, and it functions like it is. And there's, like we say about the Minim. We say, like the Rams, we say there's Hashgacha, it's Hashgacha Klalas. There's Hashgacha on the species of animals, and the, you know, species of plants. Why? Because that's the creation, that's how they're created, that's how they are. And God as a Bore relates to his creation in the way that they exist. So the species are an entity, okay? But in terms of man, how does man really, so to speak, how does man come under Hashgacha? He really comes under the Hashgacha insofar as he becomes the creation, what the creation of man really is. He really comes under the Hashgacha to the degree that he is Adam. And when is he fully become Adam? That's what we were discussing last year. That what is the what is really the Adam Shalem? It's the Adam that is Shalem Bedaito. It's the Adam that who's really attached to reality, because then his Tzelem Elokim is the element of man that makes him different from animal, is his Tzelem Elokim. That's his ability to understand, his ability to see, to understand concepts, to understand underlying causes. And to the degree that man looks out in the universe and understands and sees what's behind the universe, and he understands the Chochmas Hashem and appreciates it, then he really is Adam. Now, an Adam that has no knowledge is really just not much greater than this. It is basically not qualitatively above the animal. And he's not really living B'toras Adam. You understand? So that's really what Bilam was, what Bilam and Balak had to understand, that what really gives this nation what makes these people the Am HaNivchar, it's not that they're more adept at a certain type of mechanical thing of gaining some sort of a favor. It comes, the whole idea of Hashgachas Hashem is not something that we can just manipulate, because that would imply that God has a need and we could do something to satisfy that need or something like that. But on the contrary, it's not that God needs anything, but God as the Bore relates to his Bria in the sense that they exist properly before him. Insofar as man exists in line with his creation, in line with what man is designed to be, that's really what brings about the Hashgacha itself. And that's really why there's a Hashgacha Pratis by Adam. See, by the animals, there's no difference between one animal and the next. They're all just part of the klal, of the species. But Adam, each Adam, to the degree that he perfects himself, really becomes a unique Bria. And that's really, and that's what I think. That's what I think the Torah is conveying in the idea of Ki Baruch Hu, that this Am is not a people that. That get a blessing or get a curse, they are blessed. In other words, they have certain qualities that themselves, because of those qualities, automatically they're existing on a certain plane. And when a nation is existing in a certain way, then Mamela, just from the ideas of God as a Bore, there's a certain automatic idea of Hashgacha. And if you look through, that's my thesis over here, that Bilam is trying to, that really, that was the idea. When Bilam went, Hashem was saying, basically, Ramban alludes to this idea, The whole question is, what was the idea? He went and he was stopped and he went, right? That the Ramban says that really Hashem said you can only go on the condition that you express the idea that they are a blessed nation. In other words, Bilam wanted to go, and Hashem said, you can't curse them. But Ki Baruch Hu. And when Bilam decided to go, and he was stopped by the Malach, why was he stopped? Because he was going to go, he was planning on going, but not to actually give them a bracha. And he just wanted to go, and he wouldn't curse them, because he said he can't curse them. But he would try to, I guess, garner some favor in his eyes and get some money out of it. But he didn't want to actually express the ideas of bracha to them. And that was what the malach stopped him, and because he knew that he was going without the proper intention of giving the bracha. But really, according to that, the main idea was to teach the ideas of what really the bracha of this nation is based on. And I think, and I'd like to just go through now the three times. Let's see if we can understand each time what is being expressed. What characteristic of the nations of Klal Yisrael is being expressed? I mean, Bilam has some very memorable lines, right? Some very memorable lines over here. So let's take a look at each one, okay? So what's the first case? So he took him, and he said what? Let's see. Yeah. Vayomer Bilam Levolok. Yeah, he says like this. Vayosam Hashem dover b'fi Bilam. Right, so in other words, the things that Bilam says are really a Dvar Hashem. So we have to analyze them and see if we can understand the basic theme. Vayomer shuv el Balak v'chos sedabria. Tell Balak this. Vayeshev elav v'hinei nitzav al olaso hu v'chol sorei mov. Vayisa mishalo vayomer. Min Aram Yancheni Volok Melech Moav Mehar Rekedem. Okay, he's very poetic.
How you doing? How's your flight?
L'cho Orli Yaakov U'l'cho Zohar Mo Yisrael Mo Ekov Lo Kabo Kel U'mo Ezom Lo Zohar Hashem. Okay.
Put your phone on mute, please.
Okay, so what do you say? Ki Merosh Tzurim Erenu U'mi Givoos Ashurenu. Yeah, so what does that mean? Ki me rosh tsurim ereno umi givoos ashirenu. So that's from the high mountains, high rocks, ereno, I see them, umi givoos ashirenu. So Rashi says it means like this. Mistakel bereshisam ubetchilas shorsheim. V'ani roa osam yusodim v'chazakim kitsurim v'givoos halalu. Ayide avos v'imalos. So the first thing he had to explain to Balak was that this nation really has, what's special about this nation? That they're founded on the Avos and the Imos. Now, it's not just a random group of people, but they're based on, they're really descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And they embody and they adhere to certain philosophical truths that were taught by them. So that's the first element. That's really the first major element of that he had to convey to Bilam. That this nation's zechus comes from its forefathers, from the ideas from the ideas of the avos that they founded upon. Okay, that's Merosh Tzur Merenu. And then he says, "Hein om levodod yishkon uvagoyim lo yischashov." So what does that mean? They're alone. They're alone. So he was explaining to him two important ideas: that their foundation is is knowledge from the Avos, and they're bodod yishkon, bagoyim lo yischashav. They're not involved in the regular things that the other nations are chasing after. They're operating on a different plane. That's om levodad yishkon vagoyim lo yischashav. Now, is their foundation is knowledge. That's what they're founded upon, and they're not involved in the regular, things that the regular values and the values of the rest of the world. Okay. Yeah. Now he just talks about their how great they are. Mimono afra Yaakov and mispros rov Yisrael. Tomos nafshi mos yisharim utiacharisi kamahu. So then he says, what? I should die. Tomos nafshi mos yisharim utiacharisi kamahu. Yeah. So what was that? So what does that mean? Bilam is saying that what? Tehi acharisi kamahu. My end should be like them. Tomos nafshi mos yisharim. So what does that mean? It means to say that they have really, because they are founded on chokhmah and they live by those ideals, they really have a different existence completely, which is really an eternal existence. You understand? They're not operating just like a regular nation that's maneuvering in the regular culture and in the regular values and just getting ahead here. They're really operating on a different plane. And that's the beginning. Their beginning is founded on Chachmah. They operate on a different plane, alone, different from other nations, and that's really, and they're zocha to an eternal existence through that, through those things. That's why he says tiacharisi kamo, right? So that was his introduction, that they're different. Okay, and what was the next? They're not living a value of this world. That's not their life. They're not here to get the most out of this world, because that's the average nation. They're concerned with maximizing their pleasure here, right? The power here, but that's not what this name. They're levodad yishkon, vagoyim lo yischashav. They're not concerned with the other. They're not counted among the other nations in terms of that whole realm of activity, and therefore, they really are zocha to a different kind of an existence. So that's what he's trying to explain to him. That's really, ultimately, their source of strength and their source of hashgacha. Not a matter of doing this or that to God. It's a matter of their whole existence is different, and that's exhibited ultimately in the idea that. That is a Mosi Sharm. Okay? So that's basically a big, like an opening summary. Lo ish kel vichazev. Right? God is not a man that he should lie. Hu ben adam v'yisnechom. Hahu omar v'lo yasa v'diber v'lo yikimeno. Hine vorech lo kachti uverech lo ashiveno. Yeah. Lo hibit oven bi Yaakov, lo ra'om bi Yisrael, Hashem elokav imo usruas melech bo. And again, kel motziom mi Mitzrayim, kisofos reim lo. Okay, fine. Ki lo nachash bi Yaakov, lo kesem bi Yisrael. Ko eis yamer li Yaakov li Yisrael, ma po'al kel. Okay, so what is the theme of this? And then he goes again. Yeah, and what's the theme over here? So first he introduces an idea about God, right? That's his first limud. Is you are mistaken, right? You have a wrong idea about God. You think God could be bought off or, you know, bribed and changed and talked out of. Maybe you say, okay, he likes the Jews now, but he'll, maybe I can get him to switch. Right? You have a primitive idea of God. God is not like a person that has great powers that you can think that you can change his mind. Right? That's the first thing you have to explain to them. God is not like, it's not like a man. Okay? And then what? And then lo hibit oven bi Yaakov, velo ro omo bi Israel. Hashem elokov imo shruos melech bo. Ki lo nachash bi Yaakov, velo kesem bi Israel. Right? Yeah, what is that? Now, is that explaining to him that their source, the source of their zechus, is not like you think. You think God is someone like a person, and then they're the great sorcerers. No, he's telling him. He says you have the whole wrong idea. Lo, that God is not like a person, and they're not a nation of sorcerers. You understand? It's lo hibit oven biyakov lo ro'om Israel. They're really a nation that lives justly. That's the zechus. It's lo nachash biyakov lo kosh lo kesem biyisrael. He had to educate him on firstly on the relationship between God and Klal Yisrael. So his first step was to say, look, you have to get out of the general framework. Klal Yisrael is not a nation like others. They're really their yisod is chachma, and their life is different from the other nations. And now he's going into the main idea. The main idea is the idea of God and their relationship to God. So he has to break down the primitive idea from both sides. God is not to them like a God is not like a man that you can convince one way or the other. He'll say one thing this way and the other. And man is not, and the zechus and the greatness of man is not in his ability to manipulate that. On the contrary, lo ish. God is not like a man, and they're not like the coastman. What is it? It's lo hibit oven biyakov, lo ro'om obi Israel. Hashem elokov imo Israel smelchvo. What is the zchus? Why is God with them? Because they're just. There's no evil. There's no oven, and there's no omo obi Israel. It's not a matter of what they do towards God. It's a matter of how they act. It's a matter of the level that they live on, right? Okay, that was the second one. Yeah, there's all of these things that Bilam said. The Gemara says he wants to say other things, he wants to say bad things, but God put these in his mouth. Did he have bechira?
He was bochur to say the words.
Well, that's my question.
No. Vayosam Hashem dover b'fi vilam.
Maybe just his mouth.
So Vayomer shuv bolak v'chosed aver. I tell him these things. He wasn't like the donkey. He wasn't just a person. He was still a person. I mean, at this point, he really had a certain hakara. He did have a certain hakara. Okay. That's right. That's what he says, right. Hello, dibarti lechalim or kol asher yidaber Hashem oso esa. That's what he kept telling the Balak. Balak was angry. Balak kept wanting the pronouncements, the curses. Okay. Now, what's the last one? The last one is interesting. The last one is different, right? The last one is different. The last one, it says, "Vayar Bilam Kitov be'enei Hashem levarich Yisrael v'lo holach kifam b'fam l'kras nechoshem." This time he didn't go. He didn't go to try to get into a certain state. He was on his own. Vayisa Bilam es ena vayar Yisrael shochem l'shvatim. Vati olav ruach elokim, right? Yeah. So what does that mean? So what does the Chazal say that he saw them lishvatim? What does that mean that they were kol sheva v'shevet shochin la'atzmo v'eino me'uravin? Ein pischei mechuvan ze kenegze. He saw that they had that they live in the derech of tznius. The doors are not open to. They're not peeking into. Lo yatzis l'soch ol chavero. It was set up with in the derech of tznius. So he saw that zechus. Yeah. That's matov olecha Yaakov mishkan osechi Yisrael. Okay. Yeah. So here is really like goes through the success that ultimately they'll have great success. Malachim and Kel Motzio Mitzrayim Kesofos Reim Lo. Yeah. Okay. One second. It says Korah Shochak Ari Cholavi Yimikimeni Mivarecha Varuch Vorecha Ora. Okay, that one is difficult. It doesn't sound like that's any special limud over there. It just sounds like he's saying that they gain hashkacha, that they're going to be ultimately successful because of this. In other words, they're going to inherit. This is more talking about that ultimately because of this, they're going to inherit Eretz Yisrael and they're going to build the mikdash, and that will be a makom for these ideas. In other words, this is all. Through Klal Yisrael will be the ultimate fruition of the ideas of God through the Mikdash. So this was a great education to Bilam, but I don't think he really took the lesson to Balak. I don't think he took the lesson to, and Bilam himself didn't really take any lima for this. On the contrary. What was it that came out of this whole lesson? How to defeat them. And what was that? Get them off of the Chachma. Right? That was ultimately Bilam's advice. Entice them with Taiva. It was as they are, as he had to teach them, he did have an education. And he understood that God is not a man that you can woo away from a people, and he's not going to change his mind, and he's not someone you can buy off or anything like that. And their whole zechus is not bepeh in the way you thought it was bepeh. You thought it was bepeh that they know how to say things to gain God's favor, and we'll get somebody to say things. No, it's bepeh in the sense that it's through tefillah and pursuing ideas, and the only way that you can succeed is to bring them off of that level of hashgacha, to lower them and bring them back down to the regular realm. Once they're as long as they're am bodod yishkon and living on a different plane and under a different set of ideas and ideals and chachma, then they're untouchable. And the only way you can really undermine their success is by getting them into the regular world, bringing them down into the world that everybody else is involved in. Okay, but I just want to bring out a certain idea of here. I just want to bring out one point. I didn't make clearly enough before. And to me, I mean, it's not a new idea, but I just think it's important to put it together in a certain way. And that is like this: that the whole idea of Klal, of the relationship between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the idea of Torah as the vehicle for that is really a phenomenal idea. Now, we hold like this that we don't do the mitzvos for God, right? But and we're not God's people because we do the mitzvos. It's really the other way. Let me put it this way. Now, it's the mitzvos, because we do the mitzvos, that really, the whole system of Torah and mitzvos is something that elevates the person to be roy for the relationship with God. Now, we have a very unique idea. Like we say that Klal Yisrael and the Kadosh Baruch Hu are like is like a mashal, like a chasen and a kala. You know what I mean? It's a very strange notion. to have between God and man, right? Normally, you don't say that there's a you don't put them on that type of a footing. On the contrary, you know what I mean? You say God is. So what does it mean? What does it mean that Maimon Har Sinai was like a chuppah, and now there's a chasana? But what I think it means is like this: is trying to express the idea that it's not that God is beyond. It's not that we do things to gain God's favor. That's a very unequal type of an idea. It means to say that we don't change. Man doesn't change. Man is just man living his life. But he's able to manipulate the greater being. There's the greater being, there's man. There's no real connection between the two in any true sense. Right? There's no real relationship in any sense. But man can do something for God, and therefore God will give him a benefit. Whatever it is, your idea of whatever your idea is like that. But our idea is very different. We say, of course, man can't do anything for God. Of course, that's not the way it works. But there is an idea of the way that man has a relationship with God is not in a utilitarian kind of a sense. It's in the sense that we do things to elevate ourselves to be roy, that we elevate ourselves in a certain realm that we have, that we now can exist before God properly. You understand what I'm trying to say? In other words, it's all what we do for ourselves. It's not that we're doing something for God and getting paid back for it. But by living properly, by learning the ideas of the Torah, we really become we become roy for that to be considered by God. We now exist properly before God, and that's really the main idea that Bilam had no Bilam and Balak really had no clue about. And that's the central difference in the way in the outlook of the Oved of Zara to a relationship with God and the outlook of Torah. And I think that's what the parsha is trying to convey. And I'm trying to say that the main point I'm trying to make is that it's not an extraneous thing. It's not like extraneous reward and punishment type of an idea. It's to the degree that we are living as a nation that expresses the true ideas of God, then we are really worthy of this special kind of of being, the Amanivchar. It's because the Torah really elevates the person to a level that he's worthy of being of a certain type of a relationship, a certain type of hashgacha. And it's not because of something that he does, like to God as like an object. On the contrary, it's what he does to himself to make his existence more real. No, that's the marshal of the relationship thing.
Yeah,
that there really is when through the Torah and the mitzvos, Klal Yisrael do gain a reality that makes them roy for the hashgacha, which is an expression of it's because they're expressing those true ideas. How'd you put it, David? Right, the relationship is real. The relationship is real.
There's a correspondence between what we do
right.
and our being roughly then to receive the influence from
that's
that
correct.
Being.
That's correct. That was saying that a relationship, like an idea of a chasna and kala, means that there are certain realities, there are certain values, there are certain things that the relationship is based on. And the relationship is really the natural outcome of certain qualities that they share. In a certain sense, we're saying that the relationship between God and Klal Yisrael is natural in that sense. It's not an arranged marriage, so to speak. It's that because of the ideas, because of the plane of existence of Klal Yisrael, because of the ideas that they're based on, and the way that they live, and they express the true ideas of God, and God as the Borei, that naturally is the foundation of that relationship. It's not just michutz, that they're just thrown together and in a contrived kind of way. It's natural. In a certain sense, it's natural. The relationship is based on the reality of what God is and on the reality of what Klal Yisrael is. You understand?